Is that? Oh, shoot. Damn. Wondering where that's coming from.
What the? Well, it's trying.
Hello?
Hang on a second here.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. 7 o'clock or a little bit thereafter on this Saturday night, and you are listening once again to The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue here, and being perplexed about the behavior of the software. But we are back after a false start, and I believe I see Diana in the studio.
Yeah, there was a tiny hiccup, hiatus, something.
Yeah, well, you know, we beat it into submission. Sometimes we get this thing working in spite of the internet. Stacey is acting like his headphones don't work.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Diana, you may need to speak up, boost your signal somehow. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, though, that was good.
Wow. Okay.
Just
the mic just to touch.
That's excellent, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Hey, great.
Anyways, great. We had some kind of technical glitch at the
You know, we've been having interesting software issues for the last few whiles. I think probably it's Facebook trying to mess with us.
Oh, okay. Facebook, huh?
Well, you know, they think we're extremists.
Well, actually,
they actually think that I am harmful. If you try to link to a post at Hogwash, you will be told that it's a violation of their community standards. And in some cases, they'll even tell you that Hogwash is a source of spam.
Well, anyway.
Which, by the way, is defamatory. And all I'll say is that I have a certain amount of experience in the defamation lawsuits as a defendant. It would be a shame to have to get more experience as a plaintiff, but I have contacted Facebook and asked for an explanation.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this week I had a post called Harmful Extremist Content.
At Hogwash?
Mm-hmm. Why does Facebook want you to be concerned? And Facebook is issuing messages to some users with such messages as this: are you concerned that someone you know is becoming an extremist? We care about preventing extremism on Facebook. Others in your situation have received confidential support.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did.
Yeah, well, I don't want to tell them about my Bernie bro son, so I'm not going to snitch them out. Pavlik Moroch, what is the guy's name? Diana?
Pavel?
Yes.
Morozovich.
Yes, right. Yeah, I'm not going to go that route and become a young pioneer.
Murdered him. His uncles took him out in the woods and murdered him. So,
apparently we need Mark Zuckerberg to protect us from thought crimes. I am quoting here from the New York Post.
Real newspaper.
Yes. An eyebrow-raising new Facebook features warn users when they might have been exposed to extremist content or if they know someone who is becoming an extremist, prompting concerns it may target conservative voices and stifle free speech. One of the alerts reads, "You may have been exposed to harmful extremist content recently. Violent groups try to manipulate your anger and disappointment. You can take action now to protect yourself and others." It continues.
Well, yeah, but Walgreens has been doing that by closing down their Bay Area stores.
Both of the alerts redirect users to a support page. Andy Stone, a Facebook spokesperson, confirmed that the company is testing the prompts as part of a wider approach to radicalization prevention. Quote, "This test is part of our larger work to assess ways to provide resources and support to people on Facebook who may have been engaged with or were exposed to extremist content or may know someone who is at risk. We are partnering with NGOs and academic experts and hope to have more to share in the future," end quote.
Academic
experts.
Yeah.
I'm a subject matter expert for some things.
Somehow I don't think these messages are going out in Arabic. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah. But they are going out. They are going out around the United States in English and Spanish and a few other languages. But you know, it makes Facebook look actually kind of stupid. On the other hand, they do have enough smarts to be in Menlo Park instead of downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Well, you know, a city's got to know its limitations. And there was a rather well-circulated, retweeted tweet from Michelle Tandler that said, "Anecdotally, every single one of my friends right now is considering leaving San Francisco, and frankly, myself included. The biggest driver is no longer cost of living, it's crime. My friends are scared for their children, and their husbands are scared for their wives."
Yep.
And all I had to say at the end of my tweet, my post about that was Inspector Callahan was unavailable for comment.
Yeah.
Because he's fictional.
Yeah, but he said actually somebody that looks that acts like him is probably what it's going to take.
You know, I don't think even that would help. I remember coming out of the opera one time and heading for the garage. And there's a couple of homeless guys having a complete and total meltdown on the street, you know, yelling at each other, fists are waving. They hadn't gotten into actual physical contact yet. And some of the elderly people who had been at the opera were really scared. And I'm like, look, you're in a miniature tank. Put the windows up, lock the doors, and don't stop. And this is 3 years ago. There's too much of it. And it's just even Harry Callahan could not turn this around.
Well, then maybe we could bring John Vernon back Dean Warner instead of the Wormer instead of the mayor, and he could put all these people on double secret probation.
Yeah, who was the actor? Oh, Charles Bronson is what I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. Death Wish. You remember that, and that involved an attack on his wife. That was the what set that character off. And you know, the thing is that the person you quoted there, Michelle Tandler, is a whose tweet you quoted, John. Mm-hmm. She is a San Francisco native and a Democrat. Okay, mm-hmm. She is not some kind of dangerous right winger, and she is just fed up. I was just looking at her Twitter feed, and she tweeted out a burglar who was arrested, and tweeted out a copy of his criminal record and said, "How is someone with this rap sheet, you know, even out on the street?" He had been arrested 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times previously in just since September of 2020. Okay, 7 times in the span of 9 months, you know, or 10 months. And it's just, you know, and it's just, it's Chessa Bowden.
Yeah.
You know, is the,
Bowden, yeah.
Yeah, it's the guy, it is the district attorney. And the same is true, by the way, of the problem in Chicago.
Or Baltimore.
Yeah, but you look specifically at Chicago, and
do you remember the Jussie Smollett case? Do you remember?
Kim Fox.
Kim Fox. Thank you. And I did some research today because I'm wondering what's going on in Chicago that this person, Kim Fox, is the DA and Lori Lightfoot, the I think she's an amphibian. Seriously, I believe she's got gills, but or something. There's something weird about that woman. Anyways, but how is it that the black population of Chicago is 25%? Did you know that? Did you know that?
Yeah.
25% of the population of Chicago is black, yet they constitute 83% of homicide victims. And for some reason, it's impossible to elect a white person to office there. They must have a black mayor and they must have a black state's attorney. And, it's the question is that, see, what happens is that once a city becomes dominated and controlled by Democrats, right, that the criminal element takes control of one party and thereby controls the entire city. That's what happened in California. It's not just San Francisco anymore, right? It was statewide referendums that revolutionized the law there and made, what is it now, $950 before you can be charged with grand theft? $950, $949, it's a misdemeanor. They're not even going to bother, chasing you down.
There was the flash attack on I think it was a Neiman Marcus in San Francisco the last year. But you can even at their store prices, you can get a couple of nice handbags for that kind of money.
Actually, if each one walked out with one of they were smashing the display cabinets. They were breaking the glass. Therefore, they were going for the ones that are anywhere from 700 to about 15,000. Some of them are up to 15,000. Needless markup. That store that sits there at on that corner with the glass round glass front is a flagship location. It used to be iMagnon, or do I mean Cyril Magnon? I'm not sure. It's been a few years, but that is one of the most iconic high end retail places in the city. It's Macy's main store is right across the street. It is a big, important store, and the stuff in there is stupid expensive. I mean, unbelievable. I took a friend of mine to lunch at the Rotunda there once, and you know, it was a great lunch, but wow, what it cost.
Well, yeah, you're better off going to Nordstrom.
Well, Nordstrom, yeah, but except Nordstrom has this wonderful upper deck with a bunch of restaurants, including the Lark Creek Inn, which is a great little steakery. It's just wonderful. I cannot recommend it enough if it's still there.
Yeah, well, when Connie was working with Williams-Sonoma, the one of the anchor stores in South Coast Plaza is the Nordstrom, and it was a wonderful place to go to their restaurant and 25-cent coffee. Nice. I mean, even in the 80s, a 25-cent coffee was a bargain. So
a bargain.
New York, though, was the first place I ever had to pay $2 for a cup of coffee.
I'm sitting here, by the way, looking at the results of the 2019 Chicago mayoral election.
Yeah.
And guess what they have there? Ranked order voting.
Yeah.
Ooh,
and
that sort of guarantees.
Yeah. And in the first round, you know, basically, in the first round, Lori Lightfoot got a little bit more than a third of the vote. But then you go to the second round, the third round, you know, and so she gets 74% of vote in the Democratic primary. And, you know, but the thing is that in a city like Chicago or New York, winning the Democratic primary is tantamount.
Well, I grew up in Tennessee in the 50s and 60s when there was no such thing as Republicans didn't even bother to have the primary. So sometimes they didn't even run a candidate for governor. So it was, you know, like that was, you know, in August, we knew who the new governor was going to be. You know, that's, things have changed and things also don't change. Basically, there are some trajectories that we've been on for quite a while. And like some of those really stupid stuff that people are just now beginning to catch on to, like critical race theory, because once again, as a bit of the left's overreach, they pushed it just a little too hard, a little too fast. But Andrew Breitbart, I mean, let people know what was coming.
Yeah, on Thursday, I had a post called The Ghost of Andrew Breitbart, calling attention to something that was at the Federalist in an article explaining how it was that Andrew Breitbart made conservatives aware of critical race theory in 2012 at CPAC. Mm-hmm. In 2012, he stood on stage and explained that they were about to release video showing Barack Obama taking part in a protest in support of Derrick Bell. Okay, there had been an attempt to fire Derrick Bell, and Obama was one of Derrick Bell's supporters. Well, Derrick Bell just happens to be the godfather of critical race theory. And so
at least in the United States, yes.
Yeah. So 9 years before we were, you know, people were fighting over this in local school board meetings, Andrew Breitbart was warning people, this is coming. You need to pay attention to this. And, you know, he was a prophet without honor. Really, you know, he was not, you know, it was sort of like Cassandra, you know, trying to warn the about the fall of Troy, you know, but it is you know, that he was a visionary and saw that one of the basic concepts of the conservative movement dating back to Richard Weaver was, ideas have consequences. And these are the ideas on the left, and I've said it so often before, is that if you want to know where the future of politics are heading, where you're going. You have got to be willing to look at the radical fringe, because every movement, you know, that comes along starts out as something fringe, extreme, discredited, and you know, and so, but people get mesmerized by the game in Washington, which is politics like played like a football game between the 40-yard lines, right? Between the Tweedledum party and the Tweedledee party.
Actually, it's Tweedledum and Tweedledumber.
Yeah, right. Well, but anyways, but that, you know, it was a certain radical whose name I won't invoke, who said that there ain't a dime's worth of difference between the two major parties on any important issue. And that was true then, and it is really true now, is that there is this sort of bipartisan consensus typified by the deep state, typified by the fact that, you know, people like Justice Roberts are willing to vote for, you know, to uphold so many liberal causes that are clearly unconstitutional as far as I'm concerned. But the point is that you have to realize that the left doesn't just sit there and keep running the same game plan. They're always looking for something new, and that's how race theory.
There are a couple of things to unpack here. One is the idea of the fact that the critical theory has roots in two pieces of related soil. Okay, one goes back to the 20s in Germany, and it's purely Marxist, and the other goes back to the 60s in France, and when Marxism has obviously failed, and so Derrida and sleight of hand of we'll just change the names and keep going on the same thing, even though it's logically inconsistent, which is straight ahead. And the whole thing has to do with the narrative and the fact that if you don't believe what they believe, then you have been sucked in with a false narrative, right? And the narrative doesn't have anything to do with facts. It has to do with power.
That's right.
And it doesn't have to do with truth. It has to do with power. There was a post that Legal Insurrection had up earlier this week about the ways that the Democrats are trying to rewrite history before the ink even gets dry on what few remaining print outlets they have. There's the quote that I kind of zeroed in on was fresh off their efforts to rewrite history, but supporting the defund the police movement, Democrats have moved on to trying to revise another aspect of their history, their opposition to voter ID.
Yeah, I think that's been fun.
The the voter ID is like approved by 2-1 across the board or better, almost any category of voter that you go with. And the Legal Insurrection piece quoted House Minority Whip Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, and Senator Warnock, Democrat, Georgia, is saying, we were always for voter ID, and I've never been opposed to voter ID, right? And it didn't take a whole lot of Google food to find YouTube videos of them telling you that voter ID is Jim Crow and that's the worst thing in the world. And at the rate they keep flopping on this stuff, it's going to be hard to tell whether
a landed fish is nothing on it. Go on.
Well, it's going to be hard to remember whether or not we've always been at war with East Asia or not. It's not working. But,
and the chocolate ration has been increased from 25 grams to 20. I know.
Yeah.
It's You know, there was a poll this week that found that 58% of voters agree with the statement that the media is truly the enemy of the people.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe they don't have the people's best interest at heart.
Yeah.
Of course, we do, Stacey, which is why the people should support us.
Oh, now it's time
to talk about the yellow button.
That part of the podcast known as Shameless Capitalism, where I tell you that if you will go to theothermccain.com and look near the top of the center column, you will see the yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and to the podcast, and mainly to keep my wife happy. And keeping my wife happy is job number one for me. And by the way, I want to thank folks. Last week, I put up a post explaining that this year, for the first time in I think it's 3 years, we were not doing our annual big family fireworks show, right?
We'll get into noises like that a little bit later.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we didn't do our big family fireworks show this year, but I wanted to make a head start on the 2022 show. And so I rattled the tip jar, and I want to thank especially my good friend, you know, several readers contributed. But I want to thank my good friend Mike Rogers up in New Hampshire. Thank you, Mike, for hitting the tip jar most generously and thereby helping us get a head start on the 2022 show. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hogue's blog, Hoguewash.com.
You know, my family's in the fireworks business, but I actually don't get a cut of the money Stacy spends.
Yeah, what by the way, we've still got some shells left over from last year. We thought we had lost them, but when I went to stash what we got last week, okay, I went down to West Virginia to put them at the secret location, and there they were, the bag of shells. Leftover, which my son had thought had been lost somewhere in all the confusion of cleaning up after the show, but we found them. So since
I'm not getting a cut of the action on that, you can hit the tip jar, which is actually shaped like a tip jar icon, over there in the sidebar at Hoguewash.com. That'll take you off to my PayPal account. Or you can shop at the Hoguewash store. All sorts of interesting, we'll just use the word interesting, interesting things that you can buy there related to the blog. Or you can use the Amazon shopping links that you find at Hoguewash or the other McCain, and we get a cut of the action on those, just like all the other bloggers who participate in Amazon affiliate program, which is one of the really nice things that Amazon does. But regardless of how you choose to support us, please remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Indeed. Now, as we were talking about the narrative that the Democrats have been trying to sell is that we're all for voter suppression, right?
But, supposedly.
Yeah, and there's no illegal voting out there.
Yeah. Meanwhile.
On CNN.
Meanwhile in Houston, Texas. Last year, during the Democratic primary, CNN devoted a segment to a voter in Houston named Hervis Rogers. Hervis Rogers stood in a long line at Texas Southern University to vote, and the reporter who covered the story said it took Hervis Rogers nearly 7 hours to vote in the Democratic primary. primary
in a Democrat-run city.
Right. They don't want to mention that. So the question is, who is trying to suppress his vote? Hervis Rogers told CNN that, quote, "I figured like it was my duty to vote. I wanted to get my vote in, to voice my opinion, and I wasn't going to let nothing stop me, so I waited it out." The news now comes that Hervis Rogers is a convicted felon who was on probation at the time he voted for Democrats last year, and he has been arrested this week for illegally voting, which is also a felony in Texas. Now, ask yourself this question. If convicted felons are prohibited from voting, how was it that Hervis Rogers was on the list of registered voters in Houston? Oh, wait a minute. If convicted felons were permitted to vote illegally in Houston, what about Atlanta, Milwaukee, Phoenix, Philadelphia? My point, and we're getting to it, my point is that making sure election laws are enforced is a job of local officials. But because Democrats control all the election offices in major cities, we have no idea how many people are voting illegally in those cities, because Democrats have no interest in actually enforcing election
laws. Oh, no, you're wrong. They, as a matter of fact, Democrats in Pennsylvania have a specific interest in making sure that the laws are not enforced. Arizona Senate has conducted an audit of the Maricopa County election, and the Pennsylvania Senate is now queuing up to do an audit of several counties in Pennsylvania, including Philadelphia, and the Secretary of State and the Attorney General have issued an order to election officials not to comply with the subpoenas.
Joe Biden is flying up there next week to say it's very important for democracy that we don't audit the election results.
No, for our democracy.
I don't get how that works.
Well, no, he's going to say our democracy, not yours.
Yeah. Transparency is the enemy of democracy, according to Joe Biden. And speaking of transparency, let's talk about Hunter Biden's art. Or am I getting ahead of this?
Well, we could go there, or we could not go there. I mean,
speaking of people who belong in prison.
Well, no, hold on a second. Hunter Biden's art. If you follow my blog, you know that I have a little thing of, are you pondering what I'm pondering? And Pinky today said, I think so, brain. But who would have thought that a paint-by-numbers set could wind up with six or seven figures?
Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, Hunter Biden certainly deserves to be in prison.
Whatever.
Well, you know, he illegally, right? Joe Biden is going to crack down on illegal gun buyers.
Well, it's a felony to lie on a felony to lie on a
ATF
4473 form. And he basically put some dishonest answers on one when he bought a Smith and Wesson 38 special revolver. Which is an interesting choice for someone to buy a Smith & Wesson Model 36, not even a stainless steel one, the old blue steel model. Anyway, it could be worse, though. And it's getting interesting. CNN must be in some kind of real panic, because they are actually doing some reporting on some felons.
Yes. Curtis Hope at the Media Research Center pointed out that you know that in 2018, Michael Avenatti, the creepy porn lawyer, as Tucker Carlson famously dubbed him, but Michael Avenatti, who was the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, and for some reason, by the way, and I never understood this, for some reason the Stormy Daniels quote-unquote scandal was supposed to be the thing that brought down Donald Trump, right? And I was like, what is the scandal here? I never understood what that whole thing was about. Maybe I didn't pay enough attention to the allegations, but I took it for granted that they were lying.
Well, either that or they were surprised that someone who got elected president of the United States might have had an affair either before or after he got in office.
Think that what they were trying to emphasize was, okay, there was an NDA and a payment, and they were calling it hush money. Problem being that I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be. But I think what they were trying to do was dramatize the quote-unquote hush money aspect and try to make it something beyond a contract to, shut up.
Well, yeah, but that's what a non-disclosure agreement is. It's you in exchange for employment or some other benefit, you say I'm not going to talk about the relationship. I'm covered by all sorts of NDAs with my various clients. It's lots of fun. I've even been in a situation where I was under non-disclosure agreements with two different government agencies, and I couldn't tell one agency what the other agency was doing, but I could use the knowledge I had to solve either agency's problem. It's been really kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, okay, so the NDA was supposedly, she took the money, right? She took the hush money,
signed,
but didn't hush. And so I'm like, why does that reflect badly on Trump? It just means that she breached the contract.
Well, you remember that she wound up paying Trump's legal fees for the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyways, Michael Avenatti was the lawyer, and they brought him on MSNBC and CNN over 200 times in the span of a few months in early 2018.
Well, because he was going to be a presidential candidate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's another thing.
He even made a trip to Iowa where a top Democrat operative from the D.C. area was introducing him around to people.
Oh, we know that. That's operative, don't we?
Yes, Alexandra Chalupa.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, as you may realize that Michael Avenatti was sentenced to over 2 years in prison.
Which is a light sentence, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, it was below the recommended sentencing guidelines. He's going to prison for an extortion scheme against Nike.
What do you want to bet he goes to one of the... But he's going to go to one of the nice prisons, probably. He's not going to wind up in someplace like Atlanta. He's going to wind up at Eglin Air Force Base or in Allentown, Pennsylvania, one of the minimum security ones.
Yeah, it's a federal prison, but.
Yeah.
Let me add that there are still pending state charges in California, I believe. There are some other charges against him because he allegedly swindled clients out of their funds.
That, and he's been disbarred.
Well, he certainly embezzled them, or at least that's the accusation, which is quite interesting.
Yes, but I mean, there's all sorts of evidence involved here.
Yeah.
Oh, I just, speaking of evidence.
Evidence?
I just noticed something on the table here. Should I rat you out to the FBI? Those are Legos.
Lego blocks. Yes, I have Lego blocks here.
This one.
Anyways, okay, well, yes. The Lego insurrection.
Yes.
Anyway. Oh my God. And it's not like he actually had Legos and was throwing them so that they got under the feet of people and they tripped and fell and got hurt. No, 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 no. This was months afterwards. They find... Go on.
The FBI, when they were conducting a search of one of the January 6th people, found that he had a Lego model of the Capitol building.
Yeah, I saw a Babylon Bee satire of this that had him.
The FBI raiding Legoland.
Right, you know, it's just the idea that a Lego model of the Capitol is evidence in this alleged insurrection. You know, but this is what our federal law enforcement has been up to lately.
Well, yeah. On the other hand, they haven't been doing such a great job of, you know, one of the things that the president said he's going to do is send federal agents into cities to deal with gun crime.
Yes, but how did that go in Chicago? Well,
apparently they haven't really geared up yet, I guess.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what happened. And this is not on the blog yet, but a Chicago PD officer and two ATF agents who were part of the task force there were doing surveillance in a Chicago neighborhood. It attracted attention from one of the local gang thugs who thought that they were quote unquote ops, right? In other words, members of a rival gang, right? And they're driving around in an SUV with tinted windows. And so he rolls up on them on the expressway ramp as they're leaving the neighborhood. He rolls up and starts shooting and hit all three of them. And none of them had life-threatening injuries. But here is this guy. And by the way, of course, as you may expect, he had the proverbial record as long as your arm. He's been committing crimes his entire life. He has never done anything except commit crime. Why was he out on the street in Chicago? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's because Kim Fox is the state's attorney there.
Well, yeah, there's funky state's attorneys all over.
Now you see you try to assassinate ATF agents. That's a federal charge. And guess what? They can't help you, the Democrats in Chicago.
Well, on the other hand, the U.S. attorney works for Joe Biden.
Yeah, but I get the feeling that the Praetorian Guard will insist that this criminal is going to do some very serious time.
Well, let me put you like this: people don't usually think of them too much, but the ATF maintains a fairly low profile. But you know these.
Well, let's talk about Waco. Well,
No. Let's talk about Chicago and Treasury tax alcohol tax agents in Chicago. Like Elliot Ness.
Right.
So, you know, this is kind of sick.
Actually called for Joe Biden to send federal help there.
Yes, well.
But unfortunately, it's going to mean that a certain number of her constituents, loyal Democratic voters, not Trump supporters, are going to be going to prison if they want to reduce crime there. Meanwhile, gun violence propaganda was the headline on a post I did this week where talking about a CBS, the lead item here is a CBS News headline, quote, more than 180 people died in gun violence over the July 4th holiday weekend. Right? Notice the phrase gun violence. It is the gun, according to this rhetoric, that is the major thing. Although I believe, Diana, how many guns do you have?
Let's see.
You don't want to tell us.
No, he's so.
I personally, I've got about six, maybe.
Okay, six guns.
Count that crappy 22. If you maybe seven, but you know.
Okay, Diana's got six or seven guns. John, how many guns do you have?
I don't know, but I have six or seven guns in my office.
Okay. Never mind the rest of Stately Hope Manor.
I do know how many my son has, and he has more guns in his gun safe than I have in my office.
Okay.
And that's
so,
gun safe.
So basically, between my two co-hosts here, there are at least...
At least two dozen
firearms. And how many of them were used in shootings this past weekend? Zero.
None.
Right. Exactly. Okay, so it's not the law-abiding gun owner, okay, who is causing quote-unquote gun violence. It's criminals. Criminal violence put 180 people in the hospital, some of whom died. And I had talked about the fact that the amphibian mayor of Chicago, is trying to evade responsibility for the lawlessness that is going on there. But I went down the list: Cincinnati, Baltimore, let's see, Philadelphia. Who is shooting whom? Okay, my older brother. Has one word that can explain all of this, but I'm not going to say that word, okay? Because my mama would wash my mouth out with soap, okay? But the fact is, if you want to talk about what's going on here, and why it's happening now, because, crime in America had been on decline for 20 years. Prior to 2014, and then suddenly they had what Heather McDonald called the Ferguson effect, right? Because of the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and the subsequent, Black Lives Matter movement, this protest against police caused police to pull back. If the government is and the community is not going to support the police, if prosecutors aren't going to put criminals in jail, right, you're going to have a problem, okay? And the people who are victims of this, okay, more black people are going to die as a result of black-on-black crime than were ever killed by cops in any single year.
Well, look, people need to look and go back and read Sir Robert Peel's initial descriptions of what a police force should be when he created the Metropolitan Police for London. And the idea that they're part of the citizenry that's taking a special care for the rest. Okay? Yep. And look, but the thing is that I did a post called Gun Nonviolence.
Oh.
I served in the Army, and during my time as a soldier, I engaged in violence. And much of it involved the use of firearms. But in the decades since I left the Army, I've been involved with several tense situations that could have escalated to violence, but did not. And the reason that they didn't is because the threat I was experiencing was terminated when the person or persons on the other side of the altercation realized that I was armed. And the cost-benefit ratio of getting involved with me in that situation suddenly become, they realized that it was less favorable than they had expected. My having a gun or some other weapon resulted in nonviolent ends to each one of those encounters. And now, not every bad guy is going to weigh the odds the same way those guys did. But sometimes deterrence will fail. But and you'll have to meet force with force. But so far, deterrence has worked for me. And it's been almost 50 years since I got back from Vietnam, and I haven't had to shoot anybody in that time. I'm really thankful for that. Now, being armed isn't for everybody, but it's got its advantages for people who are willing to undertake that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And I think Diana could probably remember the quote from Heinlein.
An armed society
is a polite society.
And folks are very polite down there in Valdosta, aren't they? Diana.
For the most part, although every once in a while people are not so nice, but generally speaking, yeah. I have to say, Valdosta is a really nice place. For instance, today we had a little community 5K that was in support of a particular ministry and in association with a local foundation. And we raised $82,000 for the ministry.
Oh, yay. What was it? What kind of ministry was it?
It's Living Bridges Ministry, which is a brilliant little outreach ministry that works with people who want to change their lives. They have a clothes closet for people. They have classes. They have classes on getting a job, keeping a job. They are opening a community computer lab. They are and during COVID, they stepped up with a sack lunch program, which evolved into a grocery program, and is now we've closed down the grocery program, but it's no longer needed. But nonetheless, it's a brilliant little ministry, and I can't say enough good things about it.
Yeah, my mother-in-law did a 5K, and she's 80, by the way. My mother-in-law did a 5K and has bad knees, did a 5K to raise money for a pro-life ministry in Ohio. I blogged about that.
Yeah. But I mean, the sort of ministry that Diana's talking about.
Getting people off of drugs and alcohol.
Okay. There's one thing.
Moving people forward after they've
right.
gotten out of the drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, that's usually the missing piece in my experience in trying to be helpful to people is that, you know, it's really easy to get a church to like help with somebody's electric bill or gas bill or, you know, keeps some. Mm-hmm. The water from being shut off or something like that. Mm-hmm. But and those sorts of things. And it's really easy to have churches support recovery things like AA or whatever. But what happens when the person gets clean and sober and now it has to put a life together and this getting them into this life skills that they never quite figured out? Is just really key to helping people be successful in staying recovered.
Yes.
So that's excellent. But on the other hand, you know, when the government gets involved in that sort of stuff, things just become bureaucratic. But when people get involved helping other people. That's a better thing. Speaking of the government.
Oh, boy.
Terry McAuley.
Oh, yeah.
He had a tweet to which I responded. He tweeted, "Call me crazy, but I think it should be easier to vote than it should be to buy a gun." Now, I don't know about you, Stacy or Diana, but the last time I went to vote, I didn't have to fill out an ATF form 4473 under penalty of perjury and submit it for background check by the FBI. So, you know, that was just to get handed a ballot. So, you know, it's actually been somewhat easier for me to vote in Maryland, at least, and in California and in Tennessee. It's been easier for me to vote than it has been to buy a gun in any in the places I've lived. On the other hand, I have members of my extended family in Chicago who don't even have to be alive to vote.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm pretty sure I voted Democratic in California ever since I left.
That's right. You're forever. It's permanent voting.
Yeah.
By the way, I just located, there was actually a shooting this past week in Valdosta.
There was indeed.
A 64-year-old man from Adel, Georgia.
Adel.
Adel, is that how it's pronounced
yes.
locally?
So
Adel.
Somebody will correct me tomorrow, I'm sure, but yeah.
No, I mean, it's just the same way that in Alabama, you have the town of Arab.
Right, right, right. Well, anyways, a 64-year-old man from Adel followed two women to a residence in Valdosta and opened fire on the group there. And we don't know what the motive was yet, but it appears to have been you know, some sort of personal or domestic problem.
Well,
anyway, he shot and both women survived and he is now in custody. And being that it's Lowndes County, Georgia, I don't think he's going to be out anytime soon.
Yes. Well, you know, it's a couple of significant anniversaries this week passed. Obviously, July 8th was the 74th anniversary of the Roswell incident. So all the UFO people can enjoy that. And then, of course, we had on Sunday, the 4th of July. And I had my usual post of to be careful with fireworks and stick to safe and legal firecrackers. And it has a picture of some nice standard inch and a quarter salutes. And then a 1 pound bag of Tovex with a nice slash circle through it. Stacy, on the other hand, is actually our principal practitioner of Kaboom.
Yeah. You didn't get that Tovex remark with Brett Kimberlin. Brett Kimberlin has if you know who Brett Kimberlin is, he has sort of an explosive history, you might say.
Speedway bomber.
Yes. Well, speaking of explosive histories, I had a post this week in the aftermath of July 4th weekend. I put up a fuse with the helpful advice, light fuse and get away. All right. Okay. This warning is found on all consumer fireworks. Okay. Light fuse and get away, which has never been much of a problem for me, because what we do with our fireworks is we fuse them all together so that you light one and everything goes up.
Well, yes, I'm so old. I remember when they used to say light fuse, retire quickly.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyways, light fuse and get away. And so many of the injuries reported this year had to do with idiots mishandling mortars. Okay, now I have to explain to you that a mortar, okay, in fireworks, it refers to a tube, and you put a shell down into it. A lift charge fires, which then expels the shell upward about 200 feet. And then there is a timed fuse inside there that then explodes the main charge, sending the effects, you know, spreading out over
nice
the
sparkly
sky.
Stuff and an aerial kaboom as well.
Right. And so on my post called Light Fuse and Getaway, I showed how you fuse together mortars to create mortar racks for finale barrages. And that's something that we have talked about before. Well, here is what happens is that there's one of two things that goes wrong. Okay. Number one, okay, people try to reload a hot tube. Okay.
Now, wrong.
Right. Okay. Now, each shell kit comes with a certain number of tubes. Like if you order a small shell kit with six shells and one tube, or the larger kits, which have like 24 or whatever shells, will come with four tubes.
Well, I think the last kit I provided you was two to one on tubes versus shells.
Yeah, it was like there were like eight tubes. There was a giant kit with like 118 shells or whatever. But anyways, yes. Okay.
118 shells?
It was something like that. It was a gigantic carton. You had to really see it. It's what's known in the business as a 1-1 case, okay?
The retail price was probably close to $400.
Lot of shells in that kit. But anyways, well, to explain what happens is that, okay, you light off one shell out of a tube. Right. OK, you put the shell in, you light the fuse burns down, it explodes and the shell goes up. Before you use that tube again, you must make sure that there are no sparks inside there, because that lift charge will leave sparks inside the tube. So what you do, and what I've done before, is that you wave you grab the tube by the bottom and you shake it, wave it around in the air to cool it off, then give it a minute or two, okay, to cool off, so that what happens is if you put a shell into a hot tube, it can ignite the lift charge. And because people aren't following proper safety procedures, oftentimes it'll blow your face off. A 13-year-old was seriously injured by a firework that struck his face on Long Island late Sunday night, police said. The victim was with a group of teens who were setting off fireworks outside a Deer Park home at about 10:50 p.m. when a mortar exploded in his face. According to police, the boy was not identified, was taken to Stony Brook University Hospital with serious injuries. Investigators are trying to determine how the teens obtained the fireworks. Oh, that's Long Island, New York. Fireworks are illegal there. Well, guess what, folks?
They're not illegal in Pennsylvania if you're going to take them out of state.
Right. And they're also not illegal. Yeah. And you can also buy them. And I have seen the trucks pull in from New York pull in at a certain location in Eastern Maryland where you can buy it by the wholesale case, and they go north, and nobody knows where those fireworks are.
Well, one of the largest businesses in Cecil County is in fact a fireworks manufacturer.
Right.
Or you can just come down I-65 or I-75 and shop at one of our stores.
Yeah. Well, anyways, by the way, there was a huge explosion, by the way, in California, where this guy had like 15 tons of fireworks stored behind his place and was apparently going to sell them all, except that the cops got there and they went to blow up some of the more dangerous devices he had. And it destroyed the truck and broke out of the windows in the neighborhood. Meanwhile, in Waukegan, Illinois, a man suffered a severe traumatic face injury in Waukegan while lighting off fireworks on Saturday night. The man, who is in his 20s, was shooting off fireworks around 10 p.m. at home on North County Street. He was hit in the face with a mortar-type firework and was then taken by life flight helicopter to Lutheran General Hospital.
There is a wonderful picture of Al Gore taken in Vietnam, and he's adjusting the sling on his M16 while he's looking straight down the barrel, and there's a magazine on the wall.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. Or the other way you can blow this sort of stuff up is you just load the shell upside down so it tries to fire down to the center of the earth rather than up in the air. And that reminds me of an incident. This is the sort of thing, you know, you have people with just no practical experience with things in the real world. I'm on the range coaching another ROTC cadet at Fort Bragg. The guy's from New York City.
Oh, no.
And he's loading the magazine to go in his M14. And I look at what he's doing and I said, no, the pointy end goes to the front.
But anyways, folks, is that just some basic common sense things, right, can save your life, okay? You got to realize when you're dealing with fireworks, you know, there on three different occasions, I have been on the field when a tip over happened. Okay, now what is a tip over? Well, there are these things that are sometimes called repeaters or multi-shots. We call them cakes. And what they are is a bunch of cardboard tubes glued together into a square or rectangular shape. Type of thing.
Guess what kind of glue they use, folks? Hot melt. And guess what fireworks get? Hot. So what happens to hot melt?
Yeah. Well, anyways, but
well,
sometimes
it depends on how hot it gets, doesn't it?
Yes, does
sometimes
it?
What happens is that if the cake, as we call them, these are, you light one fuse and all 16 or 15 or 25 shots go off. If the cake is taller than it is wide, the thrust of the shells going off out of the tubes can cause it to begin to wobble and tip over. As I said, now when I've often told people, you know, before we go shoot our annual fireworks show, I give a little speech to the audience. I said, folks, you know, we're going to be firing shells, you know, that are going to be going all kinds of directions, but none of them are supposed to go sideways. If you see me running, you better run.
Try to keep up.
Yes. Well, I mean, look, this stuff has a certain danger associated with it.
Yeah.
And you just have to be careful and use even a little bit of common sense will go a long way with this sort of stuff.
Proximity is the real risk. The farther you are away from the firework when it's going off, the safer you are.
Well, yes, and see, I live on the hill, a mile and a half away from the Farm Museum in Westminster. So when the fireworks display is going off, I get a real nice view. At a really safe distance. I mean, even if something launched sideways in our direction, it wouldn't make it a mile and a half.
But these people that I saw one thing where a guy killed himself firing, holding the tube over his head when it exploded. And
I don't even like Roman candles.
Right.
You know, Stacy, stuff that explodes can be dangerous.
Right. This is crazy.
Well, crazy people are dangerous.
Yes, crazy.
Country is sweaty gelignite. Here we go.
Yes, crazy people are dangerous. And I have to tell you about Andrew Cuomo's daughter.
I have to at least say you finally managed to at least not hurt Rule 5 too badly here. She's
Andrew
a reasonably attractive young girl.
Daughter. Okay. Andrew Cuomo married the daughter of Robert F. Kennedy. Okay, and so his daughter's name, hang on a second, I'm trying to come up with it. What is her name? Michaela Kennedy Cuomo. Okay, she's 23 now, and a very nice-looking young lady. Unfortunately, looks can be deceiving, and she's Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, I think is the proper word. She recently came out as demisexual.
Yeah.
Well, what is demisexual? Well, you might have thought that being attracted to Demi Moore No. Demisexual is one of those made-up words used in social media profiles by young people with mental health problems. It actually means you're kind of asexual or almost asexual or that you're only sexually interested in people with whom you have a romantic relationship. That's what demisexual means.
Well, I would, under that definition, I would qualify because that's essentially the relationship I had with Mrs. Hogue.
Well, I was when in my youth, I was a male hoe. Okay, I'm just done. If anyone, see, this is why I have no problem with slut shaming, because I was a slut and I was ashamed and I should have been ashamed. But that was back in the day. It was the 70s. Come on, man. Also part of the 80s. But you know what I'm talking about, okay?
He's so old, he actually remembers disco.
Right. Oh, do I remember disco.
I'm so old, I was too old for it.
Oh, okay, then. Well, anyways, Andrew Cuomo's daughter, Michaela, came out as demisexual, and Ace of Spades ripped this the way it deserved to be ripped, saying that these labels, all these weirdo labels, polyamorous, you know, and things like that, it's just a way to make everyone feel like they belong within the LGBTQ community. And so you have a
WTF-BBQ.
Yeah. WTFBBQ, exactly. But he quoted some of what Michaela Kennedy had to say about her sexuality, and when she was in middle school or whatever, she was quote unquote afraid. She was a lesbian, and then she later came out as bisexual, but now she says she's demisexual. And here's the thing. She can call herself whatever we want, and it doesn't mean anything. These words don't actually mean anything, because what is the meaning of a label that doesn't tell you what someone is actually doing? Okay, because that's what sexuality is. It's about behavior, not about your internal feelings. I can't tell you what your feelings are, but I can, you know, we can certainly judge your actions. And so the crazy people are dangerous. And I hear the boogie-woogie piano in the background.
Yeah, the danger here is that it is infection of other young people.
Right.
It's contagious.
At
some point, we really need to start sticking up for reality.
Yes. Well, anyway, speaking of reality, the reality is that we're running out of time. So I need to tell you that we will be back next Saturday night at our usual time, 7 p.m. Eastern, if you want to catch us live. But you can always catch us on the Podbean archive.
And there'll be a link at Hogue Wash. You can check it out
and
there.
And we'll all see you back here.
Good night, Diana.
Good night.
Mr. Breeze.